following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wake up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now, let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, the final one for the 2020 calendar year. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, finishing up the Christmas festivities, getting into New Year's. And then Georgia Southern basketball will ring in the new year against the South Alabama Jaguars. We'll get into that and much more as we go throughout this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. A lot of basketball news to get to, a lot of football to get to. But first and foremost, how was the Christmas, Danny Reed?
Came and it went. It seems like it goes quicker every year, especially when you smush a ball game in the midst of all that just 2 days before and then having to travel back home and knowing that conference basketball is just right around the corner. But I think for a lot of people that 2020 can't end soon enough. It's not that 2020 is going to end with the year becoming a new number, but I think for a lot of people, it's still going to be the fact that this was the year of a lot of close calls, a lot of what ifs, and maybe 2021 we'll see some of those actually pan out and get the Eagles some more hardware as we get ready to finish up the athletic year.
Yeah, I think the word smushed might be the best one to describe how that bowl game kind of went. But we'll dive into the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl in just a few minutes. As always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Not a whole lot of action to get to since we spoke last on last week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Did have a Georgia Southern men's basketball game last Tuesday. We will dive into that in our final segment as we cover Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball. Again, opening up conference play, women's basketball will be in Mobile against South Alabama. Men's basketball inside Hanner Fieldhouse, the first and second, to welcome in the South Alabama Jaguars. But got a pretty exciting bowl game to talk about is Georgia Southern, the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl against Louisiana Tech. And it ended up in a 38-3 victory for Georgia Southern. But I think where we need to start with this one is kind of talking pregame. You saw as the team came out, Shy Words came out, went through the entirety of pregame warmups. He ended up playing the entire game after, at one point, probably a week ago, you thought that he was done for the year. But having him back, and it really seemed to give this team a little bit of a boost.
And it was one of his best efforts, not just of this season, but I think of his four-year career spanning those 46 starts. He had 197 total yards and four touchdowns. He just looked like the guy that had done so many great things over the course of his career, being named four times All-Sun Belt Conference. Look, there have been better performances that he's had, both statistically and for the eye test, but to do that after missing a couple of weeks because of his shoulder, and look, that's a shoulder that's been bothering him since 2017. Let's not act like this is something that just popped up in 2020, whether it was the first game of the season, whether it was against Georgia State or whatever. That's a right shoulder that's not been right for a little more than 3 years now, but he stuck with it. He knew as a team leader and a team captain, if it was on him, then he had to do it one more time. And he had enough to play fourth quarters. I was expecting to get to New Orleans and to see Miller Mosley take most of the snaps, and he didn't even need his helmet. That's how much Shy was able to suck it up to run the offense. And I think the defense felt a lot of that too, with four interceptions and not letting La Tech get over 200 total yards until the final drive. But getting back to Shy, look, I know he hasn't announced anything yet regarding his future at Georgia Southern, but if there was a final game for him, that one felt like a final game. He finishes second in school history in total offense. He ties Tracy Ham's record with 34 passing touchdowns. Countless records, countless top five and top 10 finishes. You can debate it until you're blue and white in the face where he ranks amongst not just Georgia Southern quarterbacks, but meaningful Georgia Southern athletes. He's probably the most important Georgia Southern football player the last 4 years, with what he had to deal with off the field to how well he responded on the field. An unforgettable guy, unforgettable person, and the hope is that he'll be able to add the Werfel Trophy, which he should find out about very soon regarding the top not only football student athlete, college male student athlete, but with all that he's done community service as well. That would be a nice cherry on that Sunday for him.
As you go back looking through this box score for Georgia Southern in the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl, again, it was a 38-3 victory over Louisiana Tech. And Russ and I talked about it on the Ford Locker Room wrap-up on Wednesday, that it really felt like Georgia Southern had this one in control the entire time. And you were almost skeptical to say that at different points of the game, because there's been times this year where Georgia Southern seemed like they had control and then it slipped away late at the end. But this was one for a full game Georgia Southern had control of.
Yeah, 9-1 score finishes will do that to you. And having gotten up double figures in each of the five previous weeks, only to have squandered those leads, only winning two of them, it has trained you to think, okay, you're doing well, but is it going to stay this way? But I mentioned it during the opening stage of the Ford Locker Room wrap-up. It was the most complete performance of the year. I'm not counting UMass. That was their first game. They found out 5 minutes before that they were making the trip down to Southeast Georgia. This was an actual Division I opponent that had played 9 games this year. I know they thought that their conference and they thought their level of play was superior. Just convenient that they go 0-6 in bowl games this year. But I think the game was over when Malik Murray ran 43 yards on 3rd and 6 on the first drive. Yeah. I think that's when the game ended. And to get an opening drive touchdown, to lock them up, 4 interceptions, couple of sacks mixed in, 7 tackles for loss, giving up a punt return didn't help things. But at the end of the half, after Najee Thompson ran down Smoke Harris, I went back and watched that film. Najee got out and tripped up by the play, got back up, followed Harris all the way downfield. As Smoke was running out of gas, Najee caught up to him, pulled him down at the 20. They go backwards 7 yards in 3 plays. Yeah, they get a field goal, but that was their only true scoring threat outside of that final drive of the contest. But the Eagles ran where they wanted to. 8 different guys touched the ball. Gerald Green finally broke his run. Didn't need a whole lot of Logan Wright because of how well Shy did and the runs by Murray and Darius Lewis in spot duty. Sean Pelkison almost had his first career receiving touchdown, which would have given Shy the school record. I'm still not convinced that he didn't score. I've watched it from a couple of different angles. I really thought that he got in, but it felt like a really good day, and it felt like the day that this program needed, not just after losing to App the way that it did down to a lot of 3s and 4s, but also the bowl game from a year ago. Georgia Southern was better than that Liberty team. I'm not going to mince words about it. They were a better team, just didn't play like it. It was 60 minutes of who was going to be better. Liberty just so happened to be better last December down at Exploria Stadium. This year, Georgia Southern went in knowing that they were better. They had a swagger about them that all they needed to do was play like it, and they absolutely did. La Tech was never in the game, and it was really, really gratifying to see, not just for Eagle Nation, but also for, I think, the rest of the conference, who was hoping that would win as well because of how La Tech had been publicly this season about where Conference USA measured up in comparison to the Sun Belt Conference. But it completed a banner year for the league, sticking with football, trusting football, while so many other leagues could barely muster up half of a conference schedule. But the Sun Belt comes out looking maybe the best of any FBS league this year.
You go back to that almost touchdown by Sean Pelkison, and there are two things that stand out to me on that one. One, as the play happened, Russ is in my ear yelling, "He's in! Put your arms up! Come on now!" And Russ was adamant about that he was in. And then the second one was that Terry called him Pickleson.
Well, it would have been a pickle had we found out that the review showed he scored and they still didn't overturn it. But thankfully, one play later, Shy was in for one of his 4. And I think for Sean to come on at the end of the season like he did, look, he was the number 5 tight end starting the year. But when Chase Hancock and Bo Johnson go down because of injuries and Cam Brown ends up getting back to the top of the depth chart, it was Sean that emerged towards the back half of the season. He had two catches in the game. And look, you're still not going to convince me that he didn't score. But I think that over the next 4 years, because he can exercise that extra year if he wants to, I think that he's going to find the end zone plenty. And now it's going to be full bore under a Doug Bruce system, which will be newly installed going into 2021, as he was announced as the full-time OC just a couple of days ago.
And that's really, you and I talked about it, I think, at some point leading up to the game, that they knew that you were kind of going to go through a full process of interviewing different offensive coordinators or potential offensive coordinators, but you kind of felt like Doug was the front runner, and especially after the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl and the way that the offense really looked under just a couple of weeks being under Doug, you really felt like he was the front runner, and then just a couple of days after the victory is when it came out that he was going to be the full-time OC going forward.
Well, the fact that Georgia Southern could set a season high in total offense with 448 yards and rushing for nearly 350 with someone else's offense, that Doug technically wasn't using his terminology. He wasn't using his shifting, his motion, his scheme. Granted, there are plenty of similarities between what he and Bob did, but there was no such thing as a full install with just a couple of games left in the season. You have to try to tweak where you can, go with what you know, and do what that group of guys was successful doing. It was a matter of just getting into the end zone more, and I think we finally saw getting into the end zone was at the top of the list. They only settled for one field goal while La Tech kept moving the football. They couldn't score because of those four Georgia Southern interceptions all in their own territory. But with that offense, I'm pretty excited to think with Doug back at the helm, what it's going to look like next year. And schedule wise, look, you know, BYU is going to be coming to Paulson Stadium. You're hosting Gardner Webb. You're going to get a chance to go to Arkansas. You're going to Boca Raton for that rematch against FAU. And then, of course, the Sun Belt Conference slate. But I'm very excited to see what it's going to look like, whether Shy is or is not the quarterback, because you've got J.D. King announcing that if his knee is healthy, he's coming back for 21. You've got Aaron Dowdell coming back on the offensive line. You've got Todd Bradley Glenn coming back to play linebacker next year. So there's a lot of reason to be excited, even though we're still 9 months away from next season even starting.
Yeah, and you touched on it a little bit earlier that you haven't necessarily gotten an official decision on Shy Wirtz yet, but you do have a number of guys that over the last couple of days and week or so that have been coming out with if they're going to be returning, if they're not going to be returning, if they're declaring for the draft or what have you. But as of right now, and correct me if I'm wrong on this list, but the ones that will be returning next year and using the extra year of eligibility will be Todd Bradley Glenn, Aaron Dowdell, J.D. King, Daryl Baker, and Dexter Carter. Got three guys that have already said they're going to be declaring for the NFL draft and will not be returning in Ryan Langan, Rashad Byrd, and Raymond Johnson. Cam Brown said that he will be foregoing his extra year of eligibility. And then Malik Murray and Darion Anderson have said they are going to be entering the transfer portal. But focusing on the guys that are going to be coming back for a minute, when you look at what you have, J.D. King, Daryl Baker, Dexter Carter, Dowdell, and Todd Bradley Glenn, that's a pretty good nucleus to really build something around of for an extra year that you didn't think you were going to have.
Yeah, with Dowdell, the offensive line was finally a source of strength this year after seven different combos in 2019. Injuries and the death of Jordan Wiggins really put them into a tailspin. Dexter coming back, I think he's finally figured out what it takes to be a Division I wide receiver, number one because he's healthy, and he had the long touchdown catch against App State that went for 78, longest for the Eagles since 2007. And I think we mentioned this with JD before. He was leading the league in rushing still 3 weeks after he tore his ACL against Troy. That just shows you how far ahead of the curve that he was. Had nearly 200 yards against ULM earlier this year. He added strength. He added speed. He was looking like one of the league's top backs up until that injury in the second quarter against the Trojans. You throw him into what is already a stacked skill room on the offense, even though you do lose a couple of wide receivers in Murray and Anderson, because you heard about signing day picking up James Graham, the transfer from Georgia Tech, who most certainly is going to be in contention to be quarterback next year, along with how Justin Tomlin responds from his ankle surgery. And oh, by the way, Cam Ransom from Armwood down in Florida, he's somebody that's going to be heavily involved in that competition as well. That's even if Shy decides to come back. If he doesn't, then there certainly will be a new signal caller. And keep in mind, this is as as of Tuesday morning that we're reporting these opt-in, opt-outs. There's going to be plenty more over the coming hours and days. But as of right now, that is what we know, and that is what we can forecast in regards to what Eagle football is going to look like starting in spring ball 21.
For the guys that are opting out, I want to focus on the three guys that have declared for the draft. And you look at Raymond Johnson, Rashad Byrd, I think you kind of saw that coming, that they were going to be going and continuing their football career. But somebody that I was really excited to see said in his graphic that he was declaring for the NFL draft was Ryan Langan. We've talked about him a lot on this podcast the last couple of years of how good he has been as the long snapper for Georgia Southern. And I think it's one of those things, a lot like people are seeing with Tyler Bass this year, you don't realize how good he is and how much he meant to this program until maybe he's not here anymore. And I think Ryan Langan definitely has a shot at continuing his football career. But just to think that just a couple of years ago, this is somebody that was playing six-man football in Nebraska, that's pretty remarkable.
I think back to 2016 when Georgia Southern's long snapper was Travis Baugus, and he did not return for 2017. So the Eagles were in need of somebody to send the football back on special teams. Well, here's this kid, six-man football out at Riverside High in Cedar Rapids, Nebraska, whose only film was him snapping on offense, not necessarily on special teams. Talking with his father, Jim, just about a week or two ago, his only film was what he was doing on offense. Now, he had gotten involved with the Rubio Snapping School, and he had gotten some exposure that way, and Coach Lunsford had reached out to him. And 51 games later and 497 snaps, he goes down as maybe the best to ever do it at Georgia Southern. Look, I know Terry is partial to the late Stan Stipe, and for good reason, because he was the first great when I think about Carter Jones, part of the Jeff Monken era. But Ryan Langan's 497 snaps, not a single bad snap in 4 years. Not one. There were a couple muffed, but not one bad snap in 4 years.
And it's one of those things that you expect to have a bad one every once in a while, but it was almost automatic. Well, obviously it was if he didn't have a bad one. But you got to the point where if there was a long kick, you weren't necessarily worried about the snap and the hold part of it. It was just a matter of whether the kick was going to go through or not.
In the most intense situation of his career, Camellia Bowl 2018. Look, he was working with a different holder at the time, but if you don't have the snap, you don't have the hold, and you don't have Bass winning that game from 40 yards. It's just one out of 497. But from the time he got there to showing up every game, every snap, well, I say every snap until the last one, because it didn't even occur to us until after the game, but the final snap, the final PAT of the season after Gerald Green's touchdown in the final minutes, he let Logan Cox have it. And that was Logan Cox's first career snap. Now, Cox would be the prohibitive favorite going into 21 to take over long snapping duties, but that's a really classy thing for him to have done.
And to take that another step forward, and I didn't realize it until after the game, that Aaron Soka was on the sidelines taking pictures of the game. Well, as Gerald Green scores, Langan had made the decision to send Cox into snap. Well, Langan goes over, runs to Aaron Soka and says, "You got to go get a picture of his first snap of his collegiate career." And so Aaron starts taking off. I see in the press box, I saw Aaron running around the back of the end zone, and I'm just thinking, what is he doing? And come to find out, it was Ryan Langan that sent him back there to get a picture of Logan Cox's first snap.
If you want a snapshot of who he is,
snapshot. That, there it is.
I didn't even mean that. But that's who Ryan Langan is. Not being flawless, not doing his job better than anybody else did their job for four consecutive years, but being selfless enough to say, "Hey, this is your time to get going. I'm passing the football to you, so to speak." And now let's hope that legacy continues starting with 21.
We talk about the off-the-field things that Georgia Southern football is going to miss with Rashad Byrd leaving, one of the best to ever wear the blue and white. Ryan Langan is definitely in that category as well. Somebody else that's in that category is Roger Inman, and we step aside for some Eagle Tales now with Roger.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Roger, of all the times you've driven a bus for Georgia Southern Athletics, have you ever gotten pulled over?
We were coming back from VMI one day. We had four buses. If I remember who I was driving, myself, Gene Smith, Paul Moeller was in bus number four. I can't remember who was in three right off. But I came into the big city of Bamberg, South Carolina, running a hair faster than I needed to. I got clocked. Gene got clocked, and he was written a citation. I got a warning. Gene got a citation. The third driver got a citation. Paul Moeller, we got a hold of him in time. We didn't have the good cellular phone, so we were sending smoke signals to get a hold of Paul to tell him to slow down. But Freddie, the police, was with us. He was traveling with us back then. And the deputy of Bamberg County, South Carolina, was out doing his paperwork, and Freddie come up to him and tried to talk him out of, and he didn't really want to listen to one of our university police officers and how we did things back in Statesboro. And then on that Monday, Ken Brown, the chief of police, called over to the sheriff of Bamberg County, and sheriff told Ken that we're not going to do anything for you Georgians, so they're going to have to pay the tickets. So Ken told that sheriff that day, if we have the opportunity to oblige any of your people coming through Bullock County, Georgia, we'll do the favor and write them a ticket. Y'all won't scratch my back, we won't scratch your back. But some good old days in travel. Hank didn't cause the tickets, but he was in charge of travel back in at that point in time.
Roger, you never disappoint on Eagle Tales, and I don't think anybody would argue with that statement.
My guess is that's not the only time he's been pulled over, but that's the one he decided to tell us about.
Yeah, he's got to make sure he's the one that got off with the warning first.
Well, I'm glad he picked VMI, because I don't know how much we really would have talked about VMI on Eagle Tales if he didn't bring it up.
That's a very good point. Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball get things going in Sunbelt Conference play against the South Alabama Jaguars. It hasn't necessarily been the kindest team to Georgia Southern the last couple of years, but under new head coach Brian Berg. But first, before we dive into Sunbelt play, quick recap. Georgia Southern finished up the non-conference schedule down in Florida on that three-game in four-day stretch. Out at Fort Myers, last time we talked to you last Tuesday, Danny was getting ready to call that game in just a couple of hours from when we talked about it, but it didn't necessarily go the way for Georgia Southern.
Yeah, it fell 73-60. It was early on back and forth with threes as Eric Boone for Georgia Southern and Caleb Cato for Gulf Coast were trading triples. Gulf Coast ended up opening up a 9-point lead midway through the first half, and it was one of two stretches in the game where Georgia Southern went without a field goal for 7 minutes, and it hurt. First half, it was 11 straight misses. Second half, it was 10 straight misses, and the big reason why is because Georgia Southern saw more 2-3 zone in that game that they had seen their first eight games combined, and it was a good learning experience, because my guess is that regardless of what a team is good at going into conference play, Georgia Southern is going to see a lot of zone. They have not been great shooting the ball from three. They're only averaging about 5 threes per game on average against Division I competition. They're under 20% from distance. Now, getting a healthy Getty Uzupiatis back is going to help that immeasurably because of his 112 made threes at Flagler last year. And you would think that having someone like that on the perimeter that can draw attention would open things up for Kamari Brown and Eric Boone and Zach Bryant to improve their touch from beyond the arc. But Georgia Southern just had so much trouble negotiating, and they tried to dribble way too much in a high post. Got down by 17 in the second half, did cut it down to 6 3 different times, but didn't get any closer. Bryant didn't score until the second half. He had all 12 of his points after halftime. Boone ended up with 23 to lead the team, but the performance I was most encouraged about was Elijah McCadden. Look, we've seen enough from Elijah the last 2 years plus to know that he's an important player, but he missed the Carver game 2 days before because of an ankle issue. He comes back with his best game of the season off the bench, playing 32 minutes, had 16 points and 8 rebounds. 4 of those were on the offensive end. Something he's going to have to do a lot more is trust his jump shot, because in this motion offense, there's not necessarily going to be a whole lot of dribbling alleys off of the wing, which is where he's going to make most of his catches. He didn't start taking those jump shots until the FIU game, and I think he's getting more comfortable with it.
remember his freshman year, he only made 6 threes all season. Last year, he bumps that up to 35% because of how much work that he put in with former assistant Ben Betts. This year being a new scheme, he's working to find ways that he can have an impact in a motion offense that's not so reliant on getting a ball screen on the perimeter, relying on all 5 guys to be involved in the offense to screen, to cut, and to find those openings. And having Zach Bryant get involved in the offense a little bit earlier is going to help him too. Even though Bryant didn't score until the second half, that's not going to be the norm. That's going to be the exception. I don't think that there's going to be too many people in the Sun Belt or anywhere that can stay in front of him or Eric Boone, which is why I can see more teams going to his zone to try to mitigate dribble penetration. But then for the Eagles on defense, they've got to find a way to stop the three, especially after halftime. Division I opponents have shot better than 50% after the half in all 5 games this season against Georgia Southern. And South Alabama's strength so far is the 3-point shot. They're hitting nearly 40% as a team and getting off to a 6-3 start. But just like Georgia Southern, 4 of their games have been victories over non-Division I schools. And their 2 Division I victories have been at the final seconds. Mike Flowers hit a 3 to beat Florida Atlantic in the opener. And then they got a buzzer-beating 3 from Kyle Gonzalez down in Hattiesburg against Southern Miss to come back and win that game after they were trailing by 10. But definitely things for the Eagles to work on. I think that getting the break when they did was very helpful. Having played 3 to 4 days should be beneficial with all that depth, but it's tougher on the road, and it's tougher when your full complement of depth isn't healthy. And remember, one of those games was also a double overtime game against Florida International, which throws a wrinkle into things as well. But getting back home for the first of 2 to start 2021, hope the Eagles can get to 8-3 before App State's on the docket the weekend after.
And it's a little bit different of a schedule with all the COVID concerns going around, because normally you wouldn't have this much of a break after Christmas before you played another game. Usually you would have a game probably the 27th, 28th. But on the flip side of that, with Georgia Southern playing so many games in so few days and back-to-back stretches, it almost seems like a good time for Georgia Southern to have a little bit of a rest to get the legs back underneath them.
And the Eagles were actually still looking to add a game in between Christmas and the new year in the case that they would need one with the new scheduling format this year, but the season not starting until a couple of weeks later. The minimum number of games is 25, but if you play in a multi-team event like the Eagles did in Miami, you could have 27, but there's no telling how many games Georgia Southern's going to get in Sun Belt play. I mean, you could get ready for South Alabama this weekend, then find out they can't make the trip, and then you would have both of those games on Friday and Saturday scrapped. So the thought was to try to get a game, but with that amount of time, it didn't end up working out. But these guys needed their legs back under them. They're playing a defensive system that they've never done before. It's been great in the first half of games, but not having the full depth, I think, has really affected them in the second half of games. But giving time for Kamari Brown, Elijah McCadden, Cam Bryant to rest their injuries. And the hope is to get Getty and Caden Archie back from their injuries. Caden hasn't played the last 5 games because of his groin issue. And we know Getty's had the back issue that allowed him to only play the 1 game against Carver in the back end of the Florida International multi-team event just the other week. There's 18 guys on this roster, and at least 12 could see considerable minutes. You've got 9 guys right now that are averaging at least 3 rebounds per game, but there just hasn't been an instance where everybody has been healthy at the same time. And I feel like a broken record, because I think that happened with Coach Byington each of the last few years, whether it was Ike Smith that was hurt or whoever was it. Most of the time it was Ike, but it just seemed that somebody was hurt and the Eagles didn't have everybody that they could put out on the court. But I think with this break, they're going to be as close to, if not at full strength, by the time Friday gets here.
Again, you open up with South Alabama coming into Hanner Fieldhouse. Game time's just announced in the last couple of days. It'll be a 6 o'clock tip-off on Friday, 3 o'clock the tip-off on Saturday. Daniel, you'll have the countdown to tip-off 30 minutes prior to both of those on the network. And when you look at the South Alabama team, you talked about how good they are shooting the 3, and you've got 5 different Jaguars averaging double figures through non-conference play.
and it's not a typically deep rotation. Richie usually shrinks that down by the time they get midway through conference play, but at the most they're playing 7-8 guys right now, and it doesn't serve well when you go to this back-to-back day format. Yeah, game one you would think that they'd be fine, but maybe in Saturday the legs get a little bit heavy and maybe you don't have the same kind of zest that you would to open up a conference weekend. Mike Flowers, we already mentioned, the grad transfer out of Western Michigan, somebody that scored 17 a game last year for the Broncos. They had a coaching change, which is why he put his name into the portal. Initially he wanted to go back, but apparently Western Michigan had already given up his slot, so he was in no man's land. And then when he announced his intentions for South Alabama, initially his waiver request was denied in September. It was finally approved in October, giving the Jaguars their top scorer right now. He's scoring 21 a game, which is second best in the league. And that game I mentioned against Florida Atlantic a little bit earlier, he hit that three with a second left to beat the Owls to start the season. His father had passed away from cancer just the day before, and he was away from the team for a week during training camp to go back to greater Detroit area to be with him. Finds out the day before that his father had passed away. He goes out and scores 20 points in his debut, gets South Alabama off to a 1-0 record. We mentioned Gonzalez with the buzzer-beating three against Southern Miss to give them a 76-75 win down in Hattiesburg. It's a team that hasn't been very good on the offensive glass. It's because they're shooting about 50% from the field, but once again, you have to consider that they played four non-Division I teams, just like Georgia Southern has through its first nine games. Tyreek LeCure is somebody that we're going to have to focus on a little bit more this year. As a freshman, he scored five a game, getting spot duty in the starting lineup. And at this point, he's scoring 14 a game. He had 22 against Flagler a couple of games back. He has really improved his outside shooting, and he's averaging better than two steals per game this year. It is a South Alabama team that under Richie Riley is going to be heavy transfer. It's going to be a lot of JUCO, and he's even added the Division II flavor with Gonzalez coming from Southeastern Oklahoma State. That's where Dennis Rodman played his college basketball before his Hall of Fame career. He wants a veteran team, not necessarily a team that's been veteran at South Alabama, but juniors and seniors, guys that have been through it, that have played a lot of basketball. And once he gets them, he'll figure out the kind of team that he needs to build and what they need to do on offense. Defensively, they don't deviate too much from their press and their 2-3 zone. And when you hear that, you probably shudder because of how much Georgia Southern struggled against Florida Gulf Coast before the Christmas break. But with Getty back, that opens up the offense. With Caden Archie back, that opens up the offense. And with everybody else healthy as they can be, then it shouldn't be near as a concern. But South Al 6-3 for a reason, because they figured out ways to win just like Georgia Southern has.
And we've talked about it a lot over the last couple of years, how much a thorn in the side South Alabama has been to this Georgia Southern team. But when you have so many new people that haven't necessarily had to experience that struggle against South Alabama, that almost works to your favor, doesn't it?
Oh, thankfully, no more Josh Ajayi. Thankfully, no more Trey Mitchell. No more Don Coleman. No more Andre Fox. No more Chad Lott. I know I'm pretty much naming their roster, but they lost just about everybody. I think it's 85% of their scoring that is gone from 2019. And remember how hot they got? They won their final eight games. They had a 20-win season for the first time in more than a decade. And for a lot of people, they were going to win the conference tournament last year, along with Georgia Southern and Texas State and Little Rock. They all had valid cases to say, well, we think we're going to do this, but then COVID popped up and called off the season on March the 12th. But I do agree that with so many new guys there and so many new guys at Georgia Southern, the idea that that has been a struggle in the past, it does kind of go away, because from 15 through last year, it was a lot of the same guys. It was a lot of the Matthew Graves holdovers before Richie Riley took over following his five seasons. And, of course, Mark Byington was here for 7 years. I remember talking with Coach Byington numerous times that despite all of the successes that those offenses had, South Alabama was always the most difficult team to go against because the way they packed their zone in. Graves had his slant on it. Richie Riley does his off of a press. Now, they still ball pressure, force about 18 turnovers per game. Incidentally, Georgia Southern and South Al are 1-2 in the league and turnovers forced going into the opening conference weekend. But I still believe that with health and with guys that can score in the mid post and finish at the rim, that's where Georgia Southern's been really good so far, is scoring around the rim, getting the and ones, the influx, a lot of those from Caden Archie, giving him that extra time to heal. I think he could have played against Florida Gulf Coast if it was absolutely necessary. But now, instead of risking him in a game that doesn't really matter, you have him ready to roll
for the start of conference play. And I know South Alabama is going to come in guns blazing because they know that they've had Georgia Southern's number. But at the same time, Georgia Southern has been mighty tough inside Hanner over the course of the last 7 years. And only one team in the league has had more conference victories than Georgia Southern since they joined the league back in 14.
6 o'clock tip-off on Friday against South Al inside Hanner. 3 o'clock tip-off on Saturday against the Jaguars as well. For Georgia Southern women's basketball, they will make their way to the Mitchell Center in Mobile to take on the 3-3 South Alabama Jaguar women's basketball team. You've got three Jaguars in double figures. Of course, you've got the preseason player of the year in Antoinette Lewis, senior out of Memphis at 6'1", 13 points a game, almost 9 rebounds per contest, shooting the team best 55% from the floor, and she has really been a trouble for Georgia Southern the last couple of years with her size and her strength down low. One of the things that South Alabama is going to be getting back, Savannah Jones has only played one game this season because of a broken hand. She is expected to be coming back against Georgia Southern, one of the best three-point shooters in the conference for the redshirt senior. And then you've got Mahogany Vaught, who's really running the point for South Alabama in her first year of considerable minutes. And it's weird to say her first season of considerable minutes, considering she's getting about 35 per game. But she's a team best 13.8 points per game and really, really controls that offense for South Alabama. But it'll be a 2 o'clock tip-off both on Friday and Saturday for Georgia Southern women's basketball. Again, 6 o'clock the tip-off on Friday for Georgia Southern men's basketball. And this is about the time of the year where Danny and I see each other on Monday and Tuesday to get the podcast knocked out, and then it's time to go the separate ways.
Well, the good thing is that on Monday, we will be starting inside Georgia Southern basketball with head coaches Brian Berg and Anita Howard, 7 to 8 p.m. back on the Georgia Southern Sports Network. So we'll get a chance to talk a full hour of Eagle hoops. We'll recap the South Alabama swing for both teams and then talk about Eagle women hosting Appalachian State the following weekend and Georgia Southern going up the mountain in January, which is always enjoyable, up to the home center to take on the Mountaineers.
I'm sure Bill Bryan is really looking forward to that trip up the mountain.
Sure, let's go with that.
It opens up Sun Belt Conference play this weekend for Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball. All of it will be on the Georgia Southern Sports Network, and we'll be back next week to recap it all right here on Inside Eagle Nation. For the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying have a great New Year's Eve and welcome in 2021 in a Georgia Southern way. For Danny, this is Colin saying so long, everybody.
Been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.